Bobby Holland Hansen, how are you, mate?
I'm very well, thank you, mate. You're looking gorgeous as ever, buddy.
Oh, you too, my friend. You too. Don't make me look bad. Come on.
Don't be silly, mate. It's difficult for anyone.
You should have let your hair be messy or something. I mean, how can it be that perfect?
Look, this is the messy look, mate. I've just got up. This is it.
How are you, mate?
I'm good, mate. Very good. Yeah, just I guess coping or starting to adapt to the new way of life, I guess, for everyone. Which is obviously the goalposts are changing on a regular basis, but you know, it's something that's all been actually, you know, been put in front of us all as a stumbling block, and I'm trying to be as positive as I can to get through everything that's happened and you know, crack on and get ready for the rest of the year.
Oh, well, you're going to be good, mate, because you are stuntman extraordinaire. We've known each other for a bit now, but you have done some massive movies. You have been the stunt double for James Bond, Captain America, Thor. Who was the other one? The other superhero, Batman.
Yes, there he is.
What else, mate? You've done some massive movies.
I have, mate. Yeah, it's been great. Like you said, we've been good friends for a while, and I think I've been doing it for 13 years now, stunts in film and TV, and it's just flown by. You know, the last three Bonds I was lucky enough to work on, not the newest one, but the three before that, Harry Potter's, Pirates of the Caribbean, you know, the whole Thor and Avengers series with Chris and Batman. And yeah, I mean, it's been amazing, dude. Inception, I've got to work with some of the best directors in the world, Chris Nolan, Ron Howard, Taika Waititi and Ridley Scott. So listen, it's been absolutely incredible. But, you know, I want it to continue. Hopefully there's going to be some good stuff coming up. And yeah, I'm very much looking forward to turning 2020 into a good year and not having it as a bad year. It's been a bad start for everyone, but it's upwards and upwards, right?
Hope so, yes. Hope so. Well, I know that you are Chris Hemsworth's stunt double, and you're going to go and be working with Chris again shortly, right?
We were supposed to start Thor, Love and Thunder a long time ago. And obviously because of COVID, it got pushed massively. So hopefully I will get ready and start prepping soon and get over there and start rehearsing. And, you know, hopefully we will be able to start shooting next year.
I know you got a massive background in gymnastics, but how did you get into the stunt world? What was your training beforehand? And when did you decide, what age were you when you decided that you wanted to be a stuntman?
Yeah, I had a huge, you know, kickstart from a very young age with gymnastics. I started gymnastics when I was 4, and I retired competing for Great Britain when I was 17. You know, it sounds quite young, but, you know, starting at 4, you know, and finishing when I was 17, that's almost a lifetime in gymnastics, or one thing. But gymnastics just put me in such good stead for stunt work all round, with spatial awareness, you know, knowing how to land, knowing how to fall, knowing how to move through the air. It just really helped me when I moved into live shows, acrobatic shows, and then got into stunts. So gymnastics.
Well, you're tall as well, though, aren't you? You're about 6 foot or more.
That's it, mate. I'm 6'1", I'm 6'1". Yeah. And yeah, as a gymnast, when I started to grow too tall, it was, you know, it was the end of my world. I was like, you know, what am I going to do now? But actually,
that's what makes you a bit unique, I should imagine. You don't get a lot of tall gymnasts, I don't think, or do you?
No, you don't, dude. You absolutely don't. And that's, you know, what I thought at the time was that ruined my career, you know, later on actually was a massive benefit for me, what I do now. Absolutely. So be able to move the way I do for my height and build has absolutely been, you know, the thing that I think has given me an opportunity to do what I do, you know, working with some of the most amazing people at the highest level because of my gymnastic background and me growing too tall. So what started off as it was the end of the world for me is now something that I was blessed to be able to be, you know, 6'1" and be doing what I'm doing.
This is you as a man built, doing some crazy stuff.
Yeah. Ah, that's all CG, mate. I wouldn't believe that for a second. That's all CG. This was
just showing off now, look, just showing off.
Yeah, this was at Tolworth Gymnastics Club, just down the road
from I've done that move.
Hey, the way you move, dude, is unbelievable. That's why you're as successful as you are.
Now here we see the strength. Oh, that is pure strength. To me, a gymnast is the definition of strength, and I don't mean like strong man. You know, being able to be in complete control of your body, for me, is the fittest you can be.
Yeah, I mean, from a young age, and it massively is from a young age, muscle memory and that early conditioning, my upper body strength was, you know, it was something that I trained on every single session. And I've now taken that into my, you know, adult years of still being able to use that and knowing how to control my body. So to me, it feels second nature. But yeah, I'm glad I can still do it. I hope I can still do it going into my 40s, Scotty boy.
But what is this here? Is this some sort of Guinness Book of Records
thing? It is. It's the Guinness World Records, mate, that I got in back in 2009. I just finished Bond and Prince of Persia, and we shot that at Pinewood Studios, and I've got Guinness World Record for the most back somersaults with the ball in between my feet, flipping it into the basketball net. The most in. Yeah.
How many times did you get it in there, and what was the time limit?
I got 24 in an hour. Was it 27? My memory's awful. 24 or 27 in an hour. And when I arrived, this is what's crazy. When I sent my video over to Guinness World Records, they're like, yeah, amazing. Can you come in? So when I showed them what I was doing, I thought that, because no one else had done that before, I thought, oh, maybe I do like five and, you know, I've invented something. It becomes the record. And they loved it that much that they said, oh, we want to make it the feature of the whole show. It's a live show. So we want to see how many you can get in an hour. And I was like, you want me to keep somersaulting for an hour? And they were like, yeah, let's see how many you can do. Dude, I must have done about 365 standing back somersaults in an hour. And I promise you, I couldn't walk for a week. My quads were just gone. And by the end, it's so funny because the way it's cut together, by the end, when they give me my Guinness World Record medal, I am so tired and annoyed that I've got to do so many. It looks like I'm really pissed off when I took the medal. But you know, I wanted to be in a position where I'm like, yes, you know, I've got Guinness World Record, and I look like something terrible has happened.
Well, that reminds me of something. I was in the Pink Panther doing a back somersault kick on the ball, and they had me do that like, I don't know, maybe 30 times, and that was a lot for me. And I feel like that messed me up for the rest of my life. I feel like I did some damage to myself doing somersaults all day.
Yeah,
because, you know, you can't stay warm all day.
No, absolutely. And it's something that you shouldn't, that type of impact on the body, we shouldn't be doing it that many times. It's just, we shouldn't.
No. So never again. Do you still hold the record?
I do, mate. I believe that no one else has even attempted it. So I do hold the record, and we're coming up. Oh, that's it. It's over. It's 11 years coming into to 12 years of the record. But I want to attempt another Guinness World Record, hopefully maybe next year in Australia. And it's going to be the longest throw with the football. So there's already a record for it. And it's a flip throw. So almost do a head spring on the ball nearly. And then as you land, you throw it. The furthest distance. And unofficially, I know that I've broken it probably about 4 times out of 10. But this was pre back surgery. But listen, it's a challenge for me, and I want to get another Guinness World Record if I can. So that's going to be the next one for me.
Oh, good for you, mate. Yeah, best of luck for that. And I'm going to take the crown of the other one. No, I'm not. My bag's gone. My bag's gone. So how did you get into stunts, mate? And when did you make your mind up that you wanted to try that? How did it come about?
Well, I got into live shows and acrobatic shows, commercials, and I kind of started right at the bottom and kind of built my way up. So I was doing, like I said, I did Legoland, a high diving show, an acrobatic show at Legoland. I worked at Thorpe Park. I was doing Christmas pantomimes at acrobatics. Then I joined agencies for commercials, football commercials, because I used to play semi-pro football when I gave up gymnastics at 17. Oh, yeah. I played semi-pro football for Fareham Town. So I did a few football commercials and tricking commercials, doubling David Beckham, Fernando Torres, and a few others for Adidas and Pepsi. And then after that, I did a couple of parkour and free running commercials when they became fresh for K-Swiss and Duke men's aftershave and Samsonite suitcases. And then I did a couple of bits on TV. And then I got to 21 and I was like, you know, I want to take it to the next level. And what do I need to do? So I actually watched Casino Royale, and a friend of mine who used to be an ex-gymnast, Marvin Campbell, I saw his name come up in the credits. I was like, holy shit. I used to, you know, look up to him. He was an Olympian gymnast. And I was like, you know, how has he got into stunts, and not only just stunts, but on a bond? So I started training for the six skills. You have to be elite at six skills, which you know about. So I started training, and going back to my background, luckily for me, three of those skills I didn't have to train for, because it was what I did as my whole life growing up: gymnastics, trampolining, 10 meter high diving. So I literally just took the exams.
Oh, you'd already done the diving. Okay.
Yeah, well, I literally just took the exams. I looked at what I needed to do. I was like, well, I can do that in my sleep, because that's what I've done as a kid. So I just went down, took the tests, and had three straight off the bat. So I just had to get the next three, which I did kickboxing to brown belt. Had to have two amateur fights and film them to prove that you'd done it, and go through all the grading system to brown belt. And then I did swimming and scuba diving.
Everyone does swimming because it's the easiest one, right?
Well, actually, funny enough, it was the easiest one when I first started to train for the register, but they changed halfway through. And it actually...
And you were like, no!
Dude, it's honestly the most difficult one of them all now for me, because it was the equivalent of the SAS swimming test. It was, you had to do all four strokes in a time limit, like almost like national level standard. You had to swim 50 meters in 50 seconds, touch the end of the pool and drop to the bottom and hold your breath for 30 seconds. You imagine, you only when you've done 50 and 50, you've got no breath to hold. And then you've got to drop to the bottom and hold it for 30 seconds. And it feels like 2 days. You've got to do all these kind of assault courses in your clothes and like tread water with your arm. Like, dude, it's the hardest thing I've ever done. I literally had to take 6 months off of work and swim every day for 6 months to take the test. It's the hardest thing I've ever done, dude. So, I built up all those skills, but going back to how I got into the industry, and I feel so lucky in being in the right place at the right time. Just before I met you, was on bond, and I had four of my six skills, and Gary Powell, you know, I auditioned for Gary Powell, and it was to stunt double for James Bond. So then I went in, had like four physical auditions with Gary Powell, and I got the job, and it was for a specific sequence, which was the build up after the rooftop sequence. It was in the art gallery. And I was supposed to do 6 weeks, and it ended up being 6 months. And that was the start of my career. I mean, I went straight in at the top to, you know, with one of the best stunt teams and stunt coordinators out there.
Yeah. And I learned. Had you got all the qualifications at that point, or in the process of getting them?
I had four at the time, which is kind of unheard of. You know, when I got into it 13 years ago, Gary Powell, the stunt coordinator, needed something specific, a specific skill set that wasn't there at the time with my height and build for what he needed on the register. Because he tried on the register, there was no one that he could get, so he got me instead. And that was my in, you know, to the industry. And I'm so thankful to Gary and the whole team for, you know, they've all become some of my best friends now, you know. I learned so much from those guys and put me in such a good place to kickstart my career. It was my first stunt on camera, my introduction to the industry. And it was from one balcony to another, no wires, no safety below, because of the camera angle over my shoulder. And then once I jumped, the camera would pan down and see the whole, you know, the street, the set. So we couldn't have any mats. And, you know, it was well rehearsed before, and Gary Powell, you know, prepped it as you should from ground level and built up. And we built SCAF rehearsed in Panama with SCAF. You know, we put a big station up to make sure that, you know, we put crash mats on it if anything went wrong.
Right.
Did a couple of those and took that down, did it without. And, you know, the rest is history. I shot it twice at 2 a.m. in the morning on a night shoot. You know, that was my introduction. It was amazing.
So you're already okay with heights because of your high diving. But when you first did a stunt like that, what was going through your mind?
Oh, dude, I think at the time, I think because after gymnastics, I actually did a little bit of long jump, which really helped as well. And I think because of gymnastics, spring and bounce, and that's always been something that I found that's come quite easily because of the background of gymnastics. Again, always going back to that, it's been such an amazing platform. So long jumps and stuff like that, I found fairly easy. So the distance, I knew that I could clear, but it was to take into consideration the set, you know, the environment, what it was, what it meant, and the safety implications if it went wrong. That's something that I had to really zone into and go back to my gymnastics days when I used to compete and go into a zone and just focus on this one thing only and push everything out. Luckily, again, for me, it was something that I knew the skill that I could do, and I could do it comfortably, but it was bringing everything together and doing it under pressure and doing it when was needed. And don't get me wrong, if it went wrong and I didn't make the distance, then I would have been in some serious, serious trouble.
Did you really want a wire, or was it?
No wire, no safety. No, it was free. Yeah. It was a free jump, yeah. So I was in Siena for 5 weeks to shoot this sequence.
That's a good start. I know that's not you, but is he on anything, or is he just doing the jump?
Yeah, he's on a cable as well. We both are, and then we've got a cameraman following behind. But that Glenn Foster's one of my closest friends. He was Robert Downey Jr.'s stunt double after this. Well, he has been Robert Downey Jr.'s stunt double for the past 12
years. You guys have been hanging around together for ages.
Yeah. He's a very, very good friend of mine, and he's an amazing stunt performer. He's now coordinating. He's a great stunt coordinator as well, and that was Glenn.
So let me ask you this, Bobby. This amazes me, because I believe that this is Daniel Craig doing this. Am I right or am I wrong?
This bit is Daniel, yes. This is Daniel on a cable. He jumps across and he actually blows his shoulder out, I think, as he hit there.
He blew his shoulder out. Now, let me just have a little moan for a second, because this is the art of action after all. You've got Daniel Craig doing his own stunt and he blows his shoulder out. That should be like, wow, he's actually gone for it. Whether he's on a cable or not, it's amazing. But because they edit as soon as he lands, you think it's a stunt guy?
Yeah, and I guess, you know,
Daniel... Don't see his face.
Mate, he is so ballsy. He was so up for doing that. And it's a nice, that's a proper good gag, and it's high. And, you know, he properly went for it, as he does for everything. I guess because he goes for everything and he's such an athlete, you always run that risk of getting injured. And, you know, I think he did bust his shoulder a little bit on that stunt, but he was like, yep, let's go again. Like, he's a machine.
But why did they cut into it like that? It doesn't make sense.
Dude,
I'm not saying anything bad about the mate, but for me, it's like, a wasted opportunity. If that was Jackie Chan, he would have done the stunt and then he would have looked up in that same shot and he would have seen that it was Jackie Chan.
Oh, 100%.
We should have seen that it was Daniel Craig.
Absolutely, mate. And listen, that's the other thing that's very frustrating for us as stunt performers is we may shoot the best sequence in the world and then we go and move on to another movie and then that goes to post-production and gets edited for 6 months. And then you watch the film and sometimes your stunt's not only been cut, but it might have been completely gone. It's not even in the movie anymore and you busted yourself for it. That's happened to me a few times. It's part and parcel, dude. It is what it is, and it needs to... Although we're very passionate about what we do, you know, you have to look at the big picture of it having to work to tell the story. And sometimes you just can't have everything in. If it was up to stunt performers, everything would be in, you know?
Sometimes I think they should get the editor and say, look, come here, mate. Come and watch what's happened here. Come and look at it from this angle. Yeah. See the whole thing play out. And now go and edit it.
I guess this is why the people like the Chad Stowski and Dave Leach and Sam Hargrave are, you know, being, you know, they've come onto the scene and they're directing their own movies and doing them very, very well and being very successful, is because they're not only, you know, directing it, they were stunt performers themselves. They know exactly how to shoot the action and they know what they need for the edit. And they are very, you know, I mean, their movies speak for themselves. So I think that's the way that people are starting to go now. They're starting to see these you know, old stunt performers that become coordinators and second unit directors and now becoming main unit directors because they've got the pedigree, they've got the skill. And I think those guys have opened the door for everyone.
They understand it from a physical level and performing it and, you know, letting the shot breathe and being a fan of Hong Kong cinema. And they're able to, you know, calm the editors down. I mean, Quantum of Solace is a perfect example of a movie where the editing is just, it's out of control because they were trying to do that Bourne style of thing. I suppose it was all the rage back then. But like, you know, show Daniel Craig doing the stunt, man. And while I'm on it, having a moan, I just want to point out this beautiful stunt that you do in Prince of Persia, right? Like, that's beautiful. Look at the length traveled.
Okay. Yeah, no cables, that was all free.
No cable, obviously. It looks beautiful. And then you watch it in the movie. And I'm sorry to be moaning. I don't want to get into trouble.
No, that's good, mate. You've got an eye for, you do this. So it's good that you see this.
So watch it in the movie and tell me if it's just not as impressive.
Absolutely not. It's been chopped into me and Jake. Jake was on a cable. Jake did an amazing job, by the way. But there's no point in me doing that if it's not going to be used and you don't use the whole shot. I don't think it's got the same effect. And, you know, that's been chopped into four shots. And it absolutely, I agree. It doesn't look as good as what it should have or what it could have looked.
Yeah, like Baniel 13 is the quintessential parkour movie, isn't it?
Yeah.
And I know it's those guys actually doing it, but they just hold the camera back and show what happens. And it's beautiful to watch. You know, you've seen them do their thing in all its glory. It is what it is, and it's beautiful. And I know that they want to show Jake's face because he's the star. But, yeah, do it sometimes. But for me, like, just show the stunts. We know there's a stunt guy doing it anyway, right?
Yeah, I mean, listen, I think people are they're so wise to it now, and especially with social media and being able to see behind the scenes stuff, people aren't silly and they know how it works. And listen, I've got the backing of one of the biggest movie stars out there right now. Chris Hemsworth is, you know, he backs me in everything I do. He's always pushing me and you know, he can't say enough good things about me and the stunt industry and stunt personnel. Like, he's amazing, and he's always like, look, people aren't stupid, and they know that there's an element of him doing it because he's so athletic and he's an amazing physical actor, but he's like, you know, I'll let you do the stuff that you do best. And that's why I think we've got such a great relationship. He's such a great, humble dude. 3, 2, 1, go!
The stunt guys are the coolest people in the movie.
You've done more than your fair share of amazing stunts, amazing fights.
I don't do stunts. Now, well, let's just talk about this now. And I've never said this before, but we actually met on Batman: The Dark Knight Rises, and I was there as a stunt performer. Because the thing is, my agents have always said to me, "Don't do stunts," because when casting directors see that, or producers on your resume that you've done stunts, they're going to see you as a stuntman and not an actor. And that's what I was always told. Now that I've been in it for so many years, I realized that they see me as that anyway, because I do a shitload of martial arts films.
Yes.
You know, who were trying to kid? But anyway, at the time, I decided to do the double in on Batman, and I was going to double for Bane, right?
Yeah.
But I was only there for a few weeks.
Why was that, Scotty boy? Why were you only with us for a few weeks? Tell us the story.
Because I thought I was made of steel and that I could do a double side somersault right after lunch without a warm up.
Yeah.
And I tore my ACL, and you've got it on film, you're on camera.
I've got that amazing. Well, at the time, I thought you were joking. I was like, this dude is an incredible actor, not just an amazing action superhero.
Sent himself white.
And yeah. And then I was like, I remember laughing in the video and then going, oh, holy shit, he's actually hurt. And you were actually hurt, dude. I mean, what you did was really impressive. And then you were like, no, 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 I really hurt myself. And I was like, oh, shit. Yeah, so you weren't with us for very long, mate, which was a shame, because we had a great time when you were there.
Yeah, no, I was going to do stunts with the stunt boys on a massive movie. I did get to put the Batman outfit on once, but I know that you've had that on a lot, and it's no fun, is it? It's a bloody cumbersome thing, isn't it?
Dude, you know what? It's every boyhood dream, you know, Batman, you know, wear that suit. And I
just wearing it.
Put it on and you're like, wow. But then to try and think practically what you need to do with fights, stunts, how to move, you know, not just the cowl alone, let alone the rest of the costume. You put the cowl on and you can't see. You've got to look down to walk forward. It's such an odd experience. Yeah. But yeah, I think the novelty soon wears off when you're sweating at, you know, 100 degrees in Pittsburgh on the street, you know, in the streets when it's their height of their summer, and you're going through a fight with the one and only Buster Reeves, and you're going for it, and you're like, yep, let's go again, and you are in a rubber suit. So yeah, it's
and shoulder pads as well. You would lift your arm up and it would dig into your neck.
I didn't need the shoulder pads, mate. You must have needed them. I didn't need them.
I was in the pussy outfit.
Scott, that was my first 100-foot high fall. Well, it was about 92 feet. And it was, we were on a descender rig because that's what the scene needed. It looks, as you can see in the video, that Batman's got a rope around his stomach, which was dressed in as part of his costume that catches him at the bottom. But that was actually just a dummy rope. I was on a cable and had to jump and fall that hundred. And unfortunately, it gets cut together with a few different shots to make the story work, so you don't get to see the real height and the danger, if you like, involved. But yeah, it was something that I wanted. It was a bucket list to tick off as a stunt performer, and it was an incredible feeling because the...
Well, you're hitting the wall hard there, aren't you? You're getting yanked, but then you're hitting the side of the wall. Is it
yeah, well, I, yeah, well, I'm actually not... You get yanked at the bottom because of the impact, but actually jumping was free fall. So the wire was just there to catch you at the bottom and play the story of the rope around the stomach. But it actually, right. When you jump, it was literally going straight through the pulley at the speed you would be if you were, you know, you might have that slight lag because you're going, but it's pretty much almost full speed. So yeah, it was quite a smack at the bottom. I remember coming in and still trying to play the part that, you know, the Chris Nolan was asked me to play, almost play him as if he'd been knocked out. And I remember trying to still be in the character. And I remember swinging into the wall head first and crunching my neck.
Oh shit!
Yeah, that was painful.
Was it quite an impact on the midsection, or was it evenly spread out across the body? That initial yank.
It was evenly spread. The rigging team, Tom Strother, the stunt coordinator, everyone involved. George Cottle was assistant stunt coordinator, and Diz Sharp was head rigger, and Dave Cron. Those guys put the rig together, and I rode it. Those were the ones that made it work. They're incredible. You know, I had to jump and ride it, but they made sure it was all safe for me to do it. But it was very well, you know, put together, and the actual cable was at the top of my back anyway when it caught me. So it wasn't around the midriff. That was a dummy rope. But yeah, it was certainly a bit of a... It definitely took the wind out of me when I landed, that's for sure.
Talk us through this, mate.
Yeah, so this was, everything was, I'm proud of this one because everything was done free. So no cables there. I did a 45-foot high fall into boxes. And then we cut into this shot where I jump out of a cherry picker and I'm 50 feet in the air basically that roof is almost on a kind of a ramp. And the angle was like 40 degrees. And I literally jump out the cherry picker and just fall down the roof. And what's amazing is that Ben Cook was stunt coordinator and he said, look, we don't need wires. We can save you a lot of money. Bobby will do it free. So we literally jumped from that set. They were next to each other on the back lot at Pinewood. So I did this gag first. And then I jumped across to the other set with the rooftop at the 40 degree angle and then jumped out the roof at 45 feet in the air and then rolled down the roof. And then when we cut that...
So together, you're just landing into an airbag there, are you?
Into loads of boxes. I mean, I'm jumping boxes. Into about 5-6 layers of boxes there, I think.
And is there any worry of not landing flat? Do you want to like land on your back, or are you okay to land on your bum?
That's the beauty of landing in boxes, Scotty. Is they compress as you hit, so they're very forgiving if you do land awkwardly. They're very forgiving for that. But you know, you obviously want to try and land the best way you can. But I mean, that's the great thing about boxes, and they're so simple. When you tell people you jump into boxes, they're like, "Are you sure?" Like even in films in what we're shooting in 21st century, I'm like, "Yeah, I mean they're the most effective. Why change something if it's not broken?"
Yeah. And this is on the other set, yeah.
And this is right next to that other set, yeah. Just jumped out the cherry picker onto that roof.
Is that a hard hit there, or?
It was a fairly hard hit, and like out of everything of that shot, it looks like probably the least. But you know, I think I popped my shoulder a little bit. I jarred my shoulder, but that was my own fault. I mean, I landed a bit dodgy on one of the takes, but I enjoyed that so much, and it was lovely to walk away from that day and say, look, we got more than they ever expected we were going to get, and everything was with no wires, and it was amazing that the whole stunt team came together on that. and worked together and showed what we can do. And it was amazing. Everyone around me, the whole safety team that made that whole scene work. I think we did ourselves some really good. We got ourselves some proper brownie points from that. I'd be completely lying if I was telling you that when it's dangerous and it's going to be risky.
Yeah.
I said, oh, there's no fear there. I'd be absolutely lying. There's no point in me saying that. And I can only speak for myself, but that fear of what could go wrong or what may go wrong, or that fear of, you know, not many people have done this, or not, you know, this is risky. Mm. I quickly turn that into like an adrenaline kind of rush where you feel for that split second or that there's nothing's going to stop you doing it. That's kind of how there's definitely an element of fear there, but it's then controlling and, like you said, channeling that fear and going, okay, I know what I've got to do. Let's believe in what I've done to build up to this stage in rehearsals and making sure it works. I know how it feels in rehearsals. It's just trying to repeat that. Stay calm, not do anything stupid, because emotions and adrenaline can get the better of you. I do exactly the same as you. Channel vision, repeat the rehearsals in my head, go over what I need to do. And I actually am one of those people before the stunt is I don't stop moving. I kind of sway. Or I'm just kind of rubbing my arm, like getting ready to go.
Staying warm.
That adrenaline keeps me moving constantly, but I'm staying in the zone and focusing on what I need to do. So, listen, there's every big stunt I've ever done, there's always that element of massive amount of fear, but it's controlling that. And then that feeling that you get of that adrenaline, and then when it goes right and you're okay and you get up after it, that feeling after that as well, that it's unexplainable. I can't explain, and you can't get that from anything else. And that's something that I feel what constantly brings you back to what we do is because you cannot get that feeling anywhere else. So this was from Avengers Infinity War. And this was a Sam Hargrave special. He wanted something very different. It's where Eitri basically bats Thor away. And Sam wanted something a bit different, and this was the result. It was almost like a full twist and jerk into that
to the back head.
And then straight down to my neck, which I literally just tucked my head in. As you can see, I can see where I am. As I take off, I'm looking the whole time. And then as I come down, I know I'm coming down heavy, and I just quickly tucked my head under for that gag. And I was like, okay.
Put it on the shoulder.
Yeah, so I luckily was able to come down to my shoulder.
Do you like the wires?
Dude, I've done so many wires in the last 13 years. I've ridden thousands of wires in the last 13 years. So it's become a massive part of my stunt career. That's kind of what I've done for so long. So yeah, listen, some wire gags are nice and most of them are not. But yeah, I mean, I've been riding them for a very long time. So, and it's quite a, I think over time I've learnt to adapt to the just small little tweaks here and there. Riding a wire, it can be a massive result. So I think I've had so much experience in them that, you know, hopefully I think I can ride them quite well, I think. But, you know, only as good as your last job, so.
Yeah, you get a lot of bruises from the wires, don't you?
Yeah, a lot of bruises and a lot more than that. Yeah, a lot of wire cuts and hematomas all over your body. Yeah, I've had wire hematomas in some of the weirdest places, you know, just because of the gag and the wraps that we do and gooch wraps and, you know, hanging in wires for a very long time. It's uncomfortable.
Explain to the audience what gooch wrap is.
A gooch wrap is basically you're in your harness and then you put the cable between your legs and then a team of either, you know, there might be three big burly rigging guys on the end of the wire just jump off a ladder and pull you through the air, or it might be on a button on a hydraulic ram.
It sends you that way.
Yeah, it can send you that way.
Picked here, and it's under your legs.
Yes, mate. It can be from the back to the front. Like there's all kinds of amazing things that we've come up with over the years where it can unroll you forwards, backwards. You can do like five.
Why do they call it a gooch wrap?
Because the cable goes right under your gooch, dude. And it's probably one of the most comfortable place in the world. And you literally do not want that to go wrong for obvious reasons. So, yeah, it's full on.
Do the Americans know what a gooch is?
Yeah, the Americans know what Gucci is, mate. Yeah.
My good. Just wondered. Talk to us about Extraction, mate. I mean, there wasn't a lot for you to do, was there, really? I mean, I know you did some stuff, but...
Yeah, I mean, that was a cruisy film for me. I didn't have to do anything. I was on holiday the whole time. No, on a serious note, Hemsey was unbelievable on that movie. He literally was the character. He was so physically in demand for that film, and he absolutely crushed it, dude. He was amazing. I mean, we worked together so well, and we're both very proud of what we managed to do on that film.
Now, I take my hat off to the man because, you know, I do fight films all the time and it's not easy. It takes its toll. And for him to do all this stuff himself, the one take aspect, take my hat off to the man. It's absolutely brilliant.
Yeah. And it's great camera trickery that Sam goes from Chris now to me and the other stunt double that go over the balcony. I mean, it's seamless. Like, Sam's a genius, man, and he's only going to be going one way, and that's up. He's phenomenal at what he does. I mean, you're never going to tell now when we go from there that he's basically, you know, that's a wipe there that he's managed to stitch together with me then going over. It's incredible. It's a great shot.
How many times did you have to do this stunt?
I think we shot that, I want to say, 6 or 7 times, and I rehearsed it maybe on the day with Max underneath that on the floor there. We rehearsed it probably, I think, 4 times.
To be honest, I'm looking at it thinking the other guy's got the harder hit. Because you can really take, you land on a nice bit of cushiony thing there, and he kind of misses it.
Yeah, mate, he got the sore end of that, I think. He did really well, Dan. He was he had some pretty big bangs on that gag. But he soldiered on, mate, and he was back to work before you knew it. He was incredible. It was an amazing stunt team. I mean, hats off to the whole stunt team involved. It was me and Chris had just finished Men in Black in Morocco, and we flew straight from Morocco to India. No, sorry, we finished Men in Black in Morocco, went to Italy and finished off Men in Black, and then we went to India. And the stunt team had already put together a lot of the stuff, so we kind of slotted in. But again, that's hats off to Chris being able to just slot in after a week of rehearsals, you know?
Well, you can see the director, Sam, is up there on a wire with the camera.
He loved it.
I think I was talking to him because... I think he was finding it difficult to keep you both in the frame, wasn't he? And coming down himself.
Yeah, mate. I mean, he's wearing a lot of hats there. He's got he's cameraman. He's trying to do a stunt. He's trying to get us all in. Like, it's only someone like him as a stunt performer could have shot that and got that shot. And it's very, I think that shot's very unique the way it's been done. And I think that there's so many of those shots in Extraction because of Sam.
Yeah, Sam is a genius.
He is, mate. Yeah.
And he's become the one take man, hasn't he?
He has, mate. He is known for the oneers, and I mean, I'm sure and I hope that we get to do this again, then there'll be an even better one, I'm sure. And again, the whole team, the whole Extraction team, they've done such a great job on that.
This looks like a nasty one to me.
That was actually, Scott, my first stunt back after back surgery, actually.
Oh, just what you needed.
Yeah. No, I was ready. It was good. It was 8 months after back surgery, so I was good and set and ready to do it. So it worked well. If my back's
Let's talk about the back surgery if we can.
Yeah, absolutely.
Literally been reconstructed, haven't you?
Yeah, I guess in a way, mate. Yeah, I mean, I've had a couple of back surgeries over the last 13 years anyway. One that went badly wrong, gave me a disc and bone infection from the operation, which definitely nearly ended my career. It started to eat my spine away, which was quite dangerous. So I was in hospital for 2 weeks.
But that was before we met on Batman in 2011, wasn't it? That happened previous to that.
Just before me and you met. And that was a difficult time. And I came back from that. And then, you know, I think I had a bad back from gymnastics anyway, because I grew too tall in a short period of time, like a huge growth spurt. And putting them out of strain on my body as a kid, those two things didn't go hand in hand. And you know, the effects after that were, you know, it made my back very weak. And I think I struggled with that throughout my career. And I knew there would come a point where I needed to have a major back surgery. And I that was the time after me and Chris had finished Extraction, and we planned that Chris was going to take 6 months off. So this was the best time for me to do it. And I promise you, it's the best thing I'd ever done. Because when I had the surgery, it's risky. Any kind of spinal surgery is risky, but it was to replace my L4, L5, S1 level discs with 2 titanium discs. I've got a caging and 6 screws through either side. They removed parts of my facet joints and reshaped my spine and stretched my spine out. So it was a major, major op. But it was the best thing I ever done. Like, it's the best it's ever been, probably since I was 14. And that's the truth, which is amazing. So it's probably...
that's great to hear, man, because, you know, when I saw the pictures of it, and I've got a bit of a bad back myself, I was nervous for you, but it's feeling really good now, is it?
It is, mate. And I think those type of things, they take time. And I think because us, and you know this, performing to the highest level, you know, athletically and trying to maintain, it's going to... And I guess what was difficult is that the surgeon is a genius, Jason Tinley, who did my surgery. But, you know, he's done the same surgery on American football players. Like, he done that surgery on his son when his son was 16. But it's the first time he had done it on a stunt performer. And I guess what's difficult for us is a golfer, a tennis player, whatever you may be, or American football, you know what you're going to do each day. Whereas a stunt performer, every stunt's different. You don't know what you're going to do. It's not just, it's landing in awkward positions. It's landing in all different parts of your body and all that kind of stress. So I guess it's a guessing game. And it worried me a lot when I had the surgery. And I have to admit, it's one of those things with the correct rehab and taking time. 8 months after my surgery was that truck jump. And that was a real hurdle that I got over, because mentally you still think, is it going to be okay? Am I going to be able to do what I did before to the highest level? Once I got over that and did that gag, it just, you know, escalated my recovery even more. And now it's every month that went on for after that just got better and better and better. And you start to think about it less and less and less. You know, I used to, throughout my whole life since I was 15, I would get out of bed in the mornings and I could barely walk. Or if I laid down for longer than 7 hours or slept for 7 hours, then when I get up, it would be an agony. Whereas now I jump out of bed, no problem. I'm a bit achy in other places because of, you know, I'm getting old. I'm not getting any younger. But overall, my back's in such a better place now. And Jason Tinley, again, he saved my career. The surgeon's a genius.
I'll probably pay him a visit one day too. Right, is this Fat Thor?
Oh, dude. That was another different thing altogether. That was for Sam Hargrave as well. Listen, dude, we're in the height of the summer in Atlanta in these hot stages, green screen stages in Atlanta. And I've got my unders on. I've then got my harness on. You then put on the fat suit. You then put on the costume. You then put on the cape. You then put on the wig. You put on the big beard. Oh, my God, dude. I felt like the Michelin man trying to articulate my body. So that ratchet, we basically, like, me and Sam agreed. We were like, look, for this to work, we need to do it much faster. And that was the result. There's a full speed one of it in a bit that you see. And I feel like I left my boots behind. It looked great.
It doesn't look good. Doesn't look like it. Oh, it looks painful. It looks like you bounce off it and come forward again.
Yeah, there's another line on my front that's pulling me down to the ground. So, yeah.
Pulling you down head first. Thanks, Hargrave.
To the whole rigging team on that, Michael Huggins, that was running that show, was as head rigger. The whole rigging team, mate, they were amazing. They kept me safe.
And this is Men in Black now, is it?
Men in Black, yeah. That was a fairly big gag as well and a heavy hit. But again, the stunt rigging team, that one was probably, that's probably one of the fastest ratchets I've ever done, that through the elevator shaft. Liam Neeson standing next to me.
This one?
No, the next one after that. So this one. Yeah, this was probably the fastest I've ever done. Like, literally gone. Liam Neeson walks in afterwards and he looks over and he's like, Bobby, are you okay? Like, it was fast, dude. it was very fast. But, you know, the result is what we got and that was what we needed. And, you know, I'm proud of that stuff, you know?
Yeah, it's amazing stuff, man. Are you just taking the hit there properly, or is there a wire stopping you for the first part?
Basically there, I'm hoisted up above camera. So I'm about 10, 12 feet above that landing. And then they drop me at full speed. Hit onto the corner of the roof, flip off, and then catch on. So yeah, that was all time planned and rehearsed, you know, we very much do things properly and very safely and build up in small increments to get them right. So
this is a fire burn. I mean, that's, I wouldn't want to do anything like that. Which one are you, mate?
The second one in on the, from the left, looking at the screen, the second one in on the left. So I've got yellow pants on. So yeah, no, hold on. Yeah, so I'm basically, so the guy that comes and meets me to get more fire off me, I'm the one that he comes to meet to get the fire off.
So what are the important things to know about when you're doing a fire burn like this?
What are the important things to know when you're getting set on fire by a flamethrower? That was the flamethrower was obviously the dragon giving it the big un to set us on fire. But listen, Rowley Earlham's another good friend of mine, very good friend of mine, and you know, very successful and very good stunt coordinator that asked me to come out and do that burn. And I think on that day, actually, unofficially, we had a Guinness World Record because I think he set something like 22 people alight in that one day for Game of Thrones, which was at the time a Guinness World Record. But that was my first ever burn. So that was, you know, that was something that, again, there's fire burns. There's plenty of my friends that are, you know, great stunt performers that have done many of fire burns. And it's a mindset you go into. It's trying to calm yourself down. And again, like we talked about earlier, is block everything out, because the last thing you want to do when you're being set on fire with a full burn or any kind of burn is to breathe in that fire, basically, because that's going to be very, very dangerous.
You have to hold your breath for the entirety.
You do. And I think that burn in total, I think it was about 20, 25 seconds.
I struggle to hold my breath for 25 seconds, mate. I'm terrible at it. I mean, this is where the swimming came in handy.
Well, listen, mate. When you know that you've got no choice because you're on fire, you manage to pull it out of the bag. Because, and again, it's one of those things, because if you panic and freak out, then you're in some serious trouble. So Rowley's very good at calming everyone down and choosing the right people for the job. And I was very thankful he gave me my opportunity to do my first burn, because again, as a stunt performer, that's a bucket list thing that I wanted to pull off. And I'd never even done a partial burn at the time, and I went straight into that. But Rowley said to me, he said, "Look, I wouldn't ask you to do this job if I didn't know that you could do it." I've worked with Rowley very closely for a long time, and you know, he coached me through the whole process, and I felt so safe with his guidance and under his control. So
the gel is freezing, right, when they put it on.
It is, but luckily we were in Seville for that burn. Oh. And it was already 50 degrees anyway. So we were like,
thankful.
Put more gel on, if anything, because we were just like, yeah. But it was, you know, it was after I literally, talking about the adrenaline rush again, Scotty, once I was put out after the first burn, I was literally like, "Boss, can we go again? Please." I was like a kid, like in a sweet shop. I was like, "Set me on fire again, please." He's like, "Bobby, calm down." I was like, "Yes, come on." I loved it. It was amazing. It was the buzz and the just that adrenaline rush from it is unexplainable.
This looks like quite a nasty one. Tell us about this, mate.
This one was pretty rapid through that big pane of glass.
What film was this? Thor.
That was on Jupiter Ascending when I was stunt doubling for Channing Tatum. Ben Cook was stunt coordinator, and you know, Ben's been—he's done everything to the highest level, and he—it was a side pick, as you can see where the cable is there. And the thing I'm holding there was to actually play as the CGI dragon that I'm fighting. So we're actually in a tussle at that point where that shot comes in. He basically comes out of nowhere and tackles me, and that's what sends me through the glass. But I literally couldn't hold on to it. Like I was supposed to let go anyway, but even if I wanted to hold on to it, it was a big, fast jerk through that pane of glass. And I had to work very closely with the special effects team. Knocker, he's a legend. He basically was standing, you know, right opposite that and looking just before I hit the glass. He would deck the glass and start to crack it. So as I start to go through it, I'm not hitting a pane of glass, because it was actually toughened. It's real glass. It's toughened because they normally, something on a smaller scale would be sugar glass, but because it was such a big pane of glass, if it was just sugar, it wouldn't have stayed together. It would have just cracked and fallen apart. So it actually was real glass, that, you know, toughened glass.
Tempered glass, yeah.
And it needed to be detted at the perfect time, which again, hats off and thank you to Knocker for keeping me safe with that. But, and the whole stunt team, everyone, the rigging team, everyone, it was... I really enjoyed.
Did you feel fine after that? Was there anything about that was painful, or?
Dude, it looked so fast, and it was lit. We did one take. The Wachowskis were, I got a massive round of applause, which felt amazing. And the Wachowskis were like, yeah, I'm more than happy with that. Thanks very much. They put four cameras on it. We shot it. Ben Cook went, thanks, mate. Good job. Well done. I'll see you tomorrow. And the next, the next day, the first thing up was I was dropping through the roof, which was another big pane of glass. And I was actually dropping through the glass to the ground. Literally the next day, the next shot up after that. So we finished the day with that. Got up at 5 in the morning, went to work and dropped through a massive pane of glass the next day.
Did you get cut on that one?
Yeah, I got little nicks here and there around my neck, some on my arms, like not much, like it was very safe, but the back of my head.
You had a bad one on extraction, didn't you? Your hand.
Yes, I did, mate. And that was my own fault, absolutely my own fault. I go through the glass, I go through the truck window, but I messed it up, and as I jumped through, I actually clipped my knee. The gap that I had to get through, my costume was 52 centimeters wide because you've got the armor on and all the all the gun stuff, and the window was 53 centimeters. I was 52, the window was 53, so I had half a centimeter underneath and above to get through that and try and stay diving through it with enough pace, and I did one take before without the glass in for a CGI pass, and I got through without clipping anything. And I just said to myself, I'll just do exactly that, the same as what I've just done, not taking into consideration that I'm now hitting a bit of glass that's going to kind of stop my momentum a little bit. And as I hit, I started to dip, clip my knee on the frame of the truck. And then I just nosedived into the ground, and to protect my face, I put my hands out, and all the glass that was from the truck that had fallen down, I hit it and it just ripped my hand open. But listen, that's what I said. Anyone that says they're a stunt performer and they've learned everything is that's rubbish. I learn stuff every single day that I go to work. Every stunt's different. And I learned from that experience. And I literally ripped my hand open and I just was, and there's blood everywhere. We just wrapped it in flesh colored tape. Was like, let's do this again so we get it right. And I wanted to do it again. And the next take, I just went for it properly all the way through, smashed through it. It was a great take. And I learned from that experience. I learned that what I did before didn't work. And I take that on to the next time I have to do it.
Well, one of the most impressive things I've seen you do is the dive through the car. And I don't know how dangerous that is really, but it just looks like, wow, that's just a very small piece of door frame to get through from you're moving at such a fast pace, miscalculation there is not going to be good.
Yeah, mate, that's up there with probably one of the most dangerous. And the reason for that is that people don't understand. They don't think it's real. And it was, I was on a cable on my ankles, but I was taken up 10 meters right above the car. And then once we got our line through the car, that I was dropped at full speed through the car, just had to stay in that dive position. And Tom Struthers was the stunt coordinator. Martin Campbell was actually the director I worked with on Green Lantern. He did Casino Royale. Yeah. And then Diz and the whole Ben, you had the whole rigging team that were there to make sure that worked. Dave Cron, everyone that made that work. But the difficult part about that people don't realize is that car was on its side, and it was exactly how you would drive it off the forecourt. They hadn't taken anything out. And the reason they didn't is because they had a camera above my feet that they wanted to have seeing the car as I went through. So the car had to be as it would be. We did that in the morning for that side of the sun. And then we did it in the evening for that side. And they would choose which they felt was the best. But in the morning, there was no wind. In the afternoon, the wind picked up and I was blown a couple of times. Luckily, again, with rehearsals and stunt team and Tom Struthers being there, I had a cue on 3-2-1 action that if during the call something felt wrong, I'd give a signal with my hand and Tom would on the radio shout, cut, cut, stop, stop, stop. So a couple of times I was in the dive position. I was taken up 10 meters above the car. And as you're going up, I'm already at 10 meters with a board. And then I go 10 meters above the car. As I'm being taken up, the car's getting smaller and smaller and smaller. I've got a pair of Speedos on. That's it. And I'm like in the dive position.
Yeah, no pads.
Like, holy shit, this is high. And then Tom's like, gives a thumbs up. You ready? And I'm like, yeah. And he's like, okay. And we're going to go in 3. And then there's a gust of wind in the afternoon that blew me off my line. And if I'm coming into a metal car. So yeah. Tom's like, stop, cut. So we all had to work in unison and work together and have that full trust with the team, the stunt coordinator, everyone involved to make that work. And dude, I'm not going to lie. It was hairy. It was certainly adrenaline rush. And yeah, I'm proud of that. That was a big commercial.
Amazing stuff, mate. Now you've done a little bit of acting recently, right?
I've had a go at it. Yes. I've had a go at it, mate. So
I've had a go at it.
Well, listen, it's always something I've been passionate, and I've got a massive love for film and performances and actors and directors, and I admire them all. And there was an opportunity that came up after my back surgery that Damian Walters, which you know very well, like the guy is a genius and
amazing gymnast, isn't he? Amazing,
mate. Yeah, I mean, yeah. We've been very, very close.
But inventive as well, inventive with it.
Oh, dude, the guy is so creative, but he's got so many talents that people haven't seen. And he's incredible with the camera. His vision is incredible. He's a great writer. So Damien wrote School Fight. It's an action comedy. He wrote it. He directed it. Part produced it. And he brought us all in and wrote parts for us. And we do our own stunts and we all play the lead parts. And listen, I guess it's one of those things. Watch this space and see what happens. But you know, we're apparently stunt performers aren't supposed to be able to act. So maybe we can't. Maybe it's not very good. I hope it is. I hope the audience love it.
I've seen some of it, mate, and it is absolutely hilarious. And you make a brilliant account of yourself. And look at you. You know, you're not exactly ugly, are you? So should be doing a bit more of that. Maybe we can even have a scrap on screen at one point. But it's been well, Bobby. Thanks for coming and being on the Art of Action, mate. We can't do this stuff without the stunt guys. They are an integral part of action movies. Over 70% of a trailer for an action movie is all thanks to you guys. I'm not a stuntman. I do what little bit I can, but I have massive respect for you guys. You risk your lives for us. It is an absolute travesty that there's not an Oscar yet for the stunt guys. I don't understand it. I know that there's some people that have reasons for that. I don't get it. We should absolutely honor you guys because you risk life and limb, and it's amazing. That's what makes action films. So thank you, mate. Keep it up, and good luck on the new Thor film.
Thank you very much, mate. Listen, it's always a pleasure. Hopefully we get to work together again very soon. It's been too long, mate, and love you, bro. Thanks for having me on. I look forward to seeing your edit of this, and listen, like I said, hopefully in the near future we get to work very closely again soon. So thanks for having me, mate. Lots of love.
Hope so, mate. Absolutely. All right, Bobby. Cheers, mate.
Take care, mate.